Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone. Wow. I guess that's the first thing I need to say. This is Wrestling Night in America. I'm Kelly Wells, filling in for the newly married Greg Parks, and I'm sitting in here with Brandon LeClaire, and we are going to talk a Survivor Series with a final moment that we did not think we were going to see for many years. I remember the end of Royal Rumble 2014, CM Punk, one of the final four in that ring, and then we never saw him again. He was going to do a WrestleMania match with Kane, but that was not his thing. So we'll try to unpack this. Brandon, I saw your tweet, and it was as simple as, I don't remember. I read a lot of tweets just now, but it was just a few words, and wow, just wow, maybe that was yours, or some such. We have seen CM Punk come back to companies and it go interestingly, join companies and see things go south in the back. Why should this be different, and what should we expect from this run? I mean, obviously they gave us so much meat on the bone. They're teasing big for tomorrow. What do you expect from here?
Wow. Yeah. A lot to unpack. It's not often that a wrestling show, gets me to audibly gasp or, actually, you know, audibly make a comment sitting here watching the show. And this got me, this got me pretty good. You know, we were all very much aware of the rumors coming in, and the table was sort of set, being that the show was in Chicago and the internet is going to do what it's going to do. But I thought it was all much ado about nothing, to be honest. And WWE deserves a lot of credit here for keeping this under wraps incredibly well. I mean, every indication from all the usual suspects and sources was that this was certainly not happening. And to keep that as close to the vest as they were able to is certainly impressive. I am optimistic. I talked about this a while back on a post show. I don't remember when, but it was shortly after Punk's AEW run met its demise. And I just said that if CM Punk is to, at some point down the line, make a return to WWE, my anticipation is that it is going to be different. Not necessarily because I think CM Punk has changed in any way, but because I don't think that CM Punk is going to be put in a position where he is going to be able to have these public spats with his coworkers, which ultimately led to his leaving the company. I mean, you heard plenty of positive things from people in AEW about CM Punk's run, particularly from the women. They seem to have really enjoyed his time there and thought that they gained a lot from his being there. And a lot of the undercard talent seem to feel that way as well. But there's clearly a divide in the AEW locker room, and there's clearly some politics being played that, while they have been played in WWE to varying degrees in the past, it seems like it is a locker room that is better suited to band together and stand up to that kind of attitude if there is one, or that the locker room in general is in a better position altogether where management is able to quell that kind of thing before it becomes a serious issue. So I'm not here to say that CM Punk is going to be, you know, employee of the month and everything is going to go swimmingly. But if we give Punk some benefit of the doubt to say that, hey, maybe he has matured since the last time he was in WWE, then I think that it is reasonable to hope that the environment that WWE produces in 2023 will be able to whatever extent that this is possible, keep Punk in line.
You know, so much of the scuttlebutt at the time in 2014 was that Punk and Triple H were the ones really, really at odds. And
right, right.
There's a lot about this situation we don't know, but one thing we do know about Triple H is that he doesn't keep a grudge to the same level
yes.
that Vince McMahon does. So
yes.
even though these guys aren't sitting down at Thanksgiving dinner together, I think that they both are pretty wise businessmen. Not saying that mm-hmm. Vince wasn't, but Vince loved to hold those grudges for as long as he could. It was just who he was, and is, you know. But that's what's so interesting to me, that this happened under the regime of Triple H when there were years he could have come back otherwise. But I really felt at that AEW scrum, how do you come back from that and show up in that
yeah.
company? It felt like it was doomed then. I also thought that on this night, they really had their cake and ate it too. They teased a way for Punk to come back. And it was going to be disappointing either way in your mind, because either Orton doesn't show up or Punk doesn't show up, and they get the benefit of both returns. Mm-hmm. Poor R-Truth came back, got a good pop, but he was the third biggest return of the night. Yes. And they got their thing with Orton deferred to let Cody win War Games, which I thought was like quietly a really cool moment
mm-hmm.
to win that match that his dad well, not popularized, created. And then they got their Punk entrance. And this is one of those times where we're on the podcast on the post show, and I feel like I'm missing a lot of information just by being here talking
yeah.
about the information that we've gotten so far. So let's talk men's War Games match just a little bit. Then we are going to go to 623, someone in the Phoenix area, I imagine. And then 305 after that, we've got you in Miami. But I got a long list of callers and I don't have either of your names. So I got some guesses. We'll find out. That men's main event, we got Orton's return, and you knew throughout the night that the fact that the men were going on last meant either the Orton thing or the Punk thing. And I started to believe the Punk thing about an hour into the show, just because they were laying it on so thick. It was almost deafening the way that these guys would not say his name, but I don't know. Maybe that's just wishful thinking. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this yet. Maybe that's obvious that I'm a little bit spastic about this. But Randy Orton returns to a huge pop and to a huge physique. This man is terrifying. and he hit he played all the greatest hits, laid down JD McDonagh. I mean, you knew he was the fall guy. And but he didn't actually eat the pin. Damian Priest did. So yeah, we got a big pin combination here, but they all did their stuff to JD, which I thought was fun because he's a great bump machine. And Orton on his return, and then we'll go to the phone lines.
Yeah, I thought that it was an interesting match. I was doing my best to compare it to really the only other modern instance we have of this on main roster WWE TV, which was, of course, last year's Survivor Series. And I was in the building for that one. And I very much thought, and I've watched that show back since, and I very much felt like this match lacked the emotional depth that one did. And as a result, I don't think that it stood up to last year's quite at the same level. But with that being said, I still thought it was fun, and I thought that ultimately the parts were maybe, you know, a little bit more significant than the sum, because there were individual moments that really stood out to me, stuff like that you've already mentioned, the the Randy Orton deferring to Cody Rhodes to allow him to get the pinfall. Randy Orton having that moment with Jey Uso deep into the match where he turns to him and you know, he's kind of teasing the turn there, but you don't really think that he's actually going to do it. It's more so acknowledging the fact that, hey, your guys put me on the shelf, and I'm letting you know that I haven't forgotten. And, you know, we'll handle our business at another time, but just so you know, we aren't good. You know, we're good for tonight, and that's all. So I thought that was a strong piece to the match. I also really liked the interplay between Drew McIntyre and Damian Priest. I thought they sold it really well. They had that stare down prior to the match that was almost comically long that Finn Balor had to break up by, you know, walking in between them to get to the ring. And then the spot during the match, too, where they came to stare each other down again, and they only, you know, briefly took a pause on their disdain for each other to execute that four-person choke slam. And the only reason, or you sense that the only reason that they were willing to do that is because they felt like that was the cap. That was the finish to the match, and they would be able to prevail and be victorious. So I thought all of those pieces were really good, especially Damian Priest in the early going when he wanted to come into the match, when McIntyre tried to, and Priest said, stick to the plan. And of course, later we'd find out that the plan was Damian Priest was to cash in his Money in the Bank and win the world title. That was another thing that really stood out to me. I mean, the fake cash-in that was sort of a swerve setting up the Randy Orton entrance was really effective. It built to a big crescendo for the crowd and a really big moment. And you know, before we get too far away from the Punk stuff, I want to mention, too, that I thought they did a really, really strong job in presenting Orton in a way and building up to the Randy Orton entrance in a way where I didn't get the feeling that that crowd was going to be let down if they didn't get Punk. I think that you kind of hit it early on when you said that they kind of had their cake and ate it too, because Punk was like the cherry on top. The crowd seemed to be ready to go home happy with the end of the match.
Yeah, I actually was a little proud of Chicago tonight. They didn't boo when Orton made his entrance. Granted, no. It's been almost 2 years, but this is the kind of thing where wrestling fans being the fickle beasts they are, you can see them booing this moment, and that just didn't happen at all. I love the moment also that you brought up with Jay. This is something throughout history in pro wrestling where they ask you to just ignore that continuity. Just don't pay attention to the fact that these guys were at odds beforehand, and that's one of the things I really, really like about modern wrestling is that you're doing you can't acknowledge the continuity every time or your head will explode. But to have that moment and to maybe create a moment that and use that moment for something that can be used on TV, I think could be some pretty gripping stuff. So yeah, came away with the same feeling. You can book War Games in a couple of different ways. One, to have a big idea that everything is centered around, and the other, to have a bunch of small ideas, a bunch of small moments of things that matter that happen piece by piece by piece. And maybe that makes for a less memorable match in the long run, but it certainly makes for a fun ride on the way. And that's what we got in our main event. We are going to take you to Phoenix right now. And if you can hear yourself being unmuted, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Sure. My name is Brian. I'm calling from Phoenix.
I thought that might be Brian. I should write down the entirety of your number and remember it next time. Brian, what did you think of War Games?
Greg, I hope you and Brandon have a real good night and say hi to all the listeners there. I thought it was a really good Survivor Series. Going back, remember watching the first one, or not even watching the first one, I had to watch it on videotape because I didn't have a pay-per-view. And all the way to now, 37 years later, was incredible. I'll make this quick so you can get some other callers on. One thing I'll say about the CM Punk thing is that I always, you know, you never say never, especially when it came to Vince McMahon. You know, Vince was always about, hey, if we can make money, let bygones be bygones. The biggest one is Court is always going to be Sable in my eyes about her coming back. Lex Luger never came back, and Randy Savage never came back, but two different circumstances other than Sable. But let's talk about CM Punk coming back. To me, it always seemed like it would be the Triple H thing because it seemed like it was more Triple H and CM Punk that always had a difference of opinion where, to my understanding, that Vince always liked CM Punk. The other thing is that I can't remember the name of the TV show, and I should have tried to look it up while I was waiting for you to come on, is that remember CM Punk was on that TV show, the one that was on, I believe it was on USA. It was just a talk show. You know, he didn't appear actually on like regular Raw or SmackDown. But it's not like CM Punk's grand return back to WWE. The other part I'll talk about briefly is, and I know you're going to segue to this anyway, is the women's war game match. And I really liked it. You know, I liked the garbage can spot. Io coming off of the top rope and with a garbage can. But the thing I think it's going to be interesting, Brandon and Greg, is going to be that even though we all saw, and it's going to be videotape, of course, saw about how Bayley made a save for a bunch of her teammates, and then also taking a lot of spears for that, too, and then she ultimately got pinned. I bet what's going to happen is that Damage Control is going to say, well, it really was your fault that we lost, because if any of us would have been there, we wouldn't have got pinned by it. And I really like how I know you're a fan of Dakota Kai, Greg, of course. About how she's been a spokesperson because she naturally understands Japan. And then you have the old Seinfeld reference where you have, like, the Korean women talking and nobody understands what they're saying until George's dad comes in and can understand what they're saying. I like how Dakota Kai is being actually the spokesperson or being the interpreter for Bayley. So if I know you're going to, again, talk about the match, Greg and Brandon, but if you want to talk a little bit talk about that aspect of the match, about how – you know, Bayley did everything she could, and she ultimately got the pin. I think she's going to get the blame for the match. And, Greg, I missed having you on 8 years back this week, but I will do a shameless plug for 8 years back. It's a VIP exclusive a show that's NXT 8 years back, I should say, where Greg and Tom Staupe talk about 8 years ago, 2015's NXT show. And I'll go ahead and, again, I'll listen and hang on. Brandon and Greg, thanks a lot. And I'm Brian, the 32-year Torch VIP senior subscriber, and hopefully everybody has a really great night. Thanks a lot again, Greg and Brandon. Good talking to both of you.
You too, Brian. Masterful trolling bear. Wasn't sure if that's what you were doing at first until you brought up my love for Dakota Kai, which is indeed absolute. I like the little moment with her too. We talked a little about that CM Punk Triple H situation, of course. Let's talk opening match. I came away with the same feeling. Certainly, the rest of Damage Control will blame Bayley. Now, does Damage Control split without Bayley? Does it get renamed without Bayley? Does it become a completely different entity, different looking, different acting from the way they are now? Because the only thing you can be sure of is that when Damage Control finally is in a big match, they'll lose it. Bianca Belair, Shotzi, Charlotte Flair, and Becky Lynch defeat Bayley, Asuka, Io Sky, and Kairi Sane. Kairi Sane with a bizarre strut to the ring. Yes, that's one of the big things I took away from it, but it amused me. And Becky and Bayley go wire to wire here. They were the first two fighting, and they were the last two, as Becky finished off Bayley with a manhandle slam through a table, assisted by all of the other baby faces. I thought that this was the kind of match that Shotzi benefits from just being in there. Like, I have spent countless hours talking about Shotzi and whether she's going to work out and her very weird way about her on the NXT show here on the Torch. And I still don't know. It's been a few years I've been talking about her, and I still don't know if this is worth all the effort, but you can't say she's not giving the effort. They are trying something with her. But at any rate, opening match, 33-37. Brandon took the time there, so if it is wrong, go ahead and blame him. But I'm going to go ahead and take his word for it on the opening women's match, and then we will go to 305.
Yeah, I thought that it was solid enough. I mean, a lot like last year's women's War Games match, I feel like it's got this unfortunate responsibility of going on first and doing a lot of the same stuff that the men did later. And that's kind of one of the fallbacks or the drawbacks of having two War Games matches in one night, is that there's only so much that they can really do given the way that WWE books these kinds of matches. You just sort of know how they're going to play out. You're going to get the good wrestlers starting off the match. They get 5 minutes to kind of wrestle back and forth, and then you're going to trade off with people bringing weapons into the ring, and they're all going to be the same weapons, and you're going to do the same things with those weapons in both matches. So it felt like the women, you know, while having the benefit of going on first so the action is fresh, it also felt like they were holding back a bit so that they didn't ruin anything major that the men wanted to do in the main event later on. So I thought it was handicapped a little bit by that, but otherwise, you know, still fun. They told some pretty good stories throughout. I thought that the reunion for Charlotte and Becky was built up well and got the crowd to buy in. They popped really big for that moment when they finally shared a hug. So that worked out well to their advantage. On the damage control side, yes, I thought that it was a very, very clear and concise story being told that Bayley was going to be the Iron Woman of the match. She was going to lead the charge, lead the offense, take a brunt of the punishment from the babyface team, and then be the one to take the pinfall in the end despite fighting valiantly. And they also put her in a really opportune position where she shoved Kairi Sane out of the way of a spear, taking a spear from Charlotte, which was a significant moment because just at the beginning of the month, Bayley had been upset about the idea that Kairi was brought into damage control without her knowing. So the fact that she would now go to bat for her and shove her out of the way and eat the spear is sending the message that Bayley is a team player and she wants this to work, which sets up Bayley very well for a nice babyface turn when damage control inevitably turns on her, I presume, very, very soon. So I liked what they did story-wise, and I'd like to see the remaining women in damage control continue on as a faction, but I do think it would be wise to rename them.
And you could do it right away, or you could have the other women dump her in the Royal Rumble, maybe. Mm-hmm. They clear the ring, and then, of course, the rest of them clear the women, the ring of Bayley. But
they always need stories like that for the Rumble, yeah, too, so it makes sense to tell a big story like that over the course of that match.
And let me say, anybody who's, like, ready to buy into that, I predict that everything will happen at the Royal Rumble every single year. So don't put too much stock into that yet, because I just love the Royal Rumble, and I'm always predicting everything will happen there. Let's go to 305, I believe Miami, but you can tell me differently if that is not the case. State your name and where you're calling from.
You're from Miami.
Oh, you cut out a little. What's your name?
DJ from Miami.
All right. Well, how did you find the show tonight, and what are your thoughts?
It's not my old Survivor Series, you know what I'm saying? So, just, you know, everything's on top of each other. Like, they should have, like, brought Randy or CM Punk out, you know, one today, one tomorrow, but, you know, Monday, but you know what I'm saying? My question is, this is a two-part question. Now that CM Punk is come, well, how many questions do I have, actually?
I'm
three,
kind of
or
a play-it-by-ear sort of guy, but three is what I usually fall back on.
Okay, great, because usually I do with Greg, so that's all I was asking. I didn't know. okay, so my first thing is a two-part question. CM Punk is back, right? Now, he is in there with, the top best, Triple H just said it right now. So, you know, we have Cody, and then we have LA Knight. So, CM Punk is a guy who loves to get hurt a lot, right? So, my question is this. Bipartite question is this. How long do you really give him to get hurt? Because he's going to try to do what he can do, you know, faster like he did, you know, at EAW. So my question is, Triple H just said on the scrum that he has the best team he'll put up against anybody in the any sport in the world, that their concussion and their medical and their wellness program is the best. So they're saying, he's saying, so my question is, when do you really think Triple H is going to see that CM Punk is definitely going to get hurt in 5 seconds? Because he keeps on doing these lariats and stupidness that he's definitely going to do with Cody or one of these guys, and he's going to get hurt in, I don't know, I'd say less than a month.
Well, I will say that I'll start by saying the culture in AEW and the culture in WWE are very different. And CM Punk may have been given a longer leash there that maybe you don't always want to give guys who want to go 100%, even in small-time matches and even in small-time moments, and you're looking to take care of them. They've just got a better infrastructure to take care of their talent, and that's something that I think has to come with time, but certainly with culture as well. Nobody is immune to freak accidents. But I would suspect that Punk will be treated like the money-making star that it can be, and they will be a lot more careful than AEW. It just, my read is that Tony does not like to say no to wrestlers, and WWE's brass typically has no such problems. Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to look at the stuff that happened to Punk and just say, like, oh, it's definitely going to happen again with full certainty. I mean, could it? Absolutely. He's an older guy at this point. He's got a lot of tread on, he's got a lot of wear on the tires. I mean, it's always possible. An injury is a part of the sport, as it is with any sport. Do I think it's far less likely in WWE? Absolutely. I mean, they work a much different style. I mean, even though Punk was working what I would consider to be AEW's main event style, which is sometimes balls to the wall crazy, but oftentimes a more traditional main event pace, depending on who you have in the ring. Take like the MJF and CM Punk series, for example, and until they went, you know, all out with the dog collar match. I think that Punk, even in his biggest appearances in WWE, is going to be working, by and large, a safer style than he did at any point in AEW. And like you pointed out, Kelly, I just think that the infrastructure that's in place in WWE is so much more precise and so much more robust in handling the way that wrestlers conduct themselves in the ring. I mean, so much of what we've heard about the way that that AEW handled their booking and their match layouts, it's really a wrestler's playground and a wrestler's paradise. And things happen because the wrestlers want them to happen, not necessarily because it is, you know, the tried and true creative direction of the company. Everything that Punk does in WWE is going to be under WWE's creative lens. So he's not going to have the leash that he had in AEW, or the long leash that he had in AEW. It's going to be very different. So, I mean, could he get hurt in match one? Of course. I mean, that's the case for anyone. But I don't look at Punk at this point and consider him to be any more or less injury prone than the next guy.
DJ, go ahead with another.
Real quick, I just want to say, like, in general, like, I feel like CM Punk likes to go fast in the very beginning, and that's what I'm scared of. Like, he might do something crazy with, you know, LA Knight or, you know, Cody or something. That's what I'm scared of, you know. And like you guys said, he has super weird shed on his tires. So I was just saying. All right. My second thing is, wow, now it's coming, you know, now that we have Orton, we have, you know, I don't know if Seth is really a babyface or what he really is, but Cody, my question is this. Now that I love LA Knight, it's just like now he doesn't really have a chance. Orton's back, Punk's back. I feel like, and then where is all our heels? Roman's gone for a while. I don't know where Bobby is. Like, I don't know what the hell. Was, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's no real heels. Who's going to, all we have is the Judgment Day and look how they're acting. Like, they're, you know, they always have stuff between each other. So it's like, who's a real heel here? In general, do you think one of these guys, CM Punk, maybe Cody, oh, not Cody, LA Knight or one of these guys are going to turn heel, or do you think we're just kind of Randy or what? Because we have so many baby faces.
That is something I had not given much thought to yet. I'll say that I think the reason LA Knight wasn't on this show was so he didn't get drawn out by these big babyface returns. You knew that they would be babyface returns, even if this isn't truly returning babyfaces and they end up turning. It would be tougher to do with Randy Orton since he did return and fight for a babyface team to turn him on the next night. But they have certainly done that before, brought somebody back, allowed them to get the babyface reaction that they knew they were going to get, and then twist the knife on the next night or the next scheduled night and show that they were truly a heel all along. They could be doing that with Punk. I think that Damian Priest continuing to be elevated is going to be part of that puzzle. I think that it's possible that Bron Breakker will be part of that, that they'll bring him up. And they tried him as a babyface. I thought it was dead on arrival. And he just is so much more at home as a heel. And I could see them trying him out near the top of the card. And if that doesn't work out, then, you know, he'll slide down the card a little bit. But I can see them at least giving that a shot. You've also got Carmelo Hayes in NXT. And Hayes is a babyface right now. They're doing some stuff with him. There's a storyline that I won't get into. But Hayes can play an extremely capable babyface and heel. So if they need to stock the shelf with heels, they've got the talent to do it. Brandon, what do you think about the state of the two sides of the ledger?
Yeah, it definitely came to mind tonight when watching that main event, especially after the win, when you had the five babyfaces standing in the ring together. It's just kind of overwhelming when you think about how over those guys are. I mean, all five of them were in a really good place creatively. It's been a long time since we've had that many strong baby faces that the crowd isn't actively rooting against or rebelling against. They're all strong for different reasons. And it's kind of unfortunate that they're in that position, because on the flip side, they just don't have the heels to match up against them. I mean, the Judgment Day, for as well as they have worked in this role and for as well as they've built their careers up both individually and as a unit, the feuds for them to be in have worn really thin. It's kind of like the Bloodline over on SmackDown, where really they've feuded with everybody, and how many times can you realistically continue to do different combinations of the same match? So that situation has worn itself a bit thin, and they are thin on the heel side. I think that Drew McIntyre finally solidifying himself as a full-blown heel is going to be good for Raw. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that they can do with him on that end. I think that, you know, if you give Randy Orton the option, he is always going to take the heel side. I think he's a more natural fit for a heel. But I also understand the flip side. If WWE feels like he is a true legacy character at this point, no pun intended, and they don't think that they can turn the tide against him, then I would understand if they think that they need to keep him babyface. But I could certainly see, you know, something working with him against Jey Uso, who I think feels pretty Teflon right now in terms of crowd reactions. I think that they could get Randy booed against Jey if they really wanted to. So that's an option as well. You know, you certainly look to bring in guys in. SmackDown is short on the heel side as well. you like you were mentioning, Kelly, you can bring guys up from NXT. And then I don't know how CM Punk is going to be slotted. I mean, just scrolling through Twitter as we were starting the show, there were, you know, some information starting to pour in, and it sounds as though they either shot an angle at the end of the show after it went off the air, or it was a legitimate reaction. But Seth Rollins left the ring in a hurry after Punk showed up, and had to apparently be held back by officials. So that was either them shooting, you know, the start of an angle, or as some other people kind of speculated, it appears as though absolutely no one other than Paul Levesque knew about Punk's return. And so Seth's reaction could have been legitimate. Who knows? But I would think that the more likely scenario is that, you know, they sent word to Seth and said, hey, let's shoot this real quick. And that's what they did. So there's a possibility there that Punk would be the heel in that matchup. So that's another option.
And Seth's kind of up for whatever, and he kind of surfs on the edges of babyface and heel all the time as it is.
Mm-hmm.
So DJ's saying, I don't really know what Seth's supposed to be. I mean, that's kind of Seth's default setting. He plays around at the edges quite a bit. He's a bit of a tweener. And if you want to lean him slightly more heel, it wouldn't take that much work, and it wouldn't take all that much of a change to his character. You just start booking him against babyfaces. DJ, go ahead with one more.
Yep, my last thing is, more real quick, I just hope that, well, actually, I love Punk as a heel compared to a babyface, so that'd be great, because Roman's going to be gone, so it'd be great for a good heel like CM Punk to do something. Maybe he can, like, do something with the Judgment Day, or I don't know. But, you know what I'm saying, something crazy. Make them shave their heads, I don't know. my last thing is EAW. Like, going into this again, it's like a two-parter. Like, I don't understand. Like, there's this guy, he thinks he's the devil, but he's a babyface devil. There's no such thing as a babyface devil. I'm so confused. But right now, of all people, Christian's the main heel. What? When this guy has the belt on this, there's Samoa Joe. I'm just so confused. Like, there's so many babyfaces there, and then there's, you know, and then there's no real things that at the end of the day, there's, like you guys said, it's like a playground. Like, they're doing craziness. Like, they're throwing bottles on the floor and then glass, and nobody's getting cut. And they're stapling your heads. Like, I don't understand. Like, somebody, are they heels? Are they baby faces? Like, I don't understand. Like, somebody needs to take charge. Like, this is not right, what they're doing. It's like EAO, whatever it's called, all over again. You know what I'm saying? It's like a challenge game. I don't get it.
All right. We thank you, DJ. What he's describing is part of why I never stay engaged with AEW for very long at a time. It feels like, if you drop out and drop in about a month later, everything will be different. The featured people will be different, with some obvious exceptions. And there's no, I don't want to say through line or get too highbrow about this, because it is pro wrestling, but it just does seem like a lot of it is Tony saying, this would be so cool, this would be so cool, and then not having the discipline to see something through before he realizes, oh, I made a promise to this person, I could get them featured. I don't want to make real specific accusations, but it just does seem like there's an excitement there about newness and shiny new toys, which is funny because WWE has used that as a storyline 1,000 times, where heels were mad about the shiny new toy. But that really is kind of the way that company presents itself sometimes. I will admit to dropping in and dropping out of that company quite a bit, and I've been out for a handful of weeks. I read up on it. I see the major things that are happening, but I've been a little more out on it. After all, I am an NJPW completist, and they have run a lot of shows in the last month and a half. So, Brandon, I will throw it to you for any thoughts you may have on AEW's problems right now.
There are a lot of them. I mean, how much time do we have? the thing with AEW right now is a lot of what you mentioned. It's a lot of the shiny new toy effect. And I understand DJ's comment about Christian Cage, though in his defense, I do think that Cage is doing the best work of his career. And I think that the faction he's put together is really, really entertaining. And week over week, I think Cage is one of the brightest spots in AEW. And I mean, that could certainly be construed as a negative, because you could look at that and say, look at all the youth that you have on that roster and all the talent that is there, and the best stuff that you're getting on a week-to-week basis is from Christian Cage. And I understand that sentiment, absolutely. But I don't think that, because that is the case, that should be used to discredit what Cage is doing, because I really do think that this run that he's on is really impressive. But I think that week-to-week AEW has a problem in telling consistent and concise storylines. I think on occasion you get some deep threads that are laid that work pretty well, but oftentimes it just feels like we're going to have this match for the sake of having this match because it's going to be a really, really good wrestling match. And most of the time, that's absolutely right. It is a really good wrestling match. But I've used this argument with AEW for a long time, and I think it still rings true, is I can see a good wrestling match anywhere. I mean, I can see it in WWE. I can see it in NXT. I can see it in AEW. I can see it in New Japan. And list, you know, any other promotion that you want. You can see a good match in Impact. What I am most drawn to with pro wrestling, especially now, is compelling stories told through the lens of professional wrestling. And sometimes I think AEW does that very, very well. But more often than not, I feel like I'm just being yelled at to watch this dream match. And that isn't what I look for. So at the end of the day, do I enjoy the match? Sure. But it's not what my vision is for pro wrestling. And for some people it is, and that's great. But the way that they're presenting these shows has clearly had an impact on their drawing ability as a whole. Because as you can see, across the board, ratings have been fairly consistent. They're not bad. They're not great. But where they're really taking a hit is in attendance. And their attendance has, on more than one occasion, crossed the threshold into embarrassment levels. And when you are going on live national television and you have to black out your entire arena because there aren't enough people there, no amount of production tricks are going to make up for the fact that you can hear the echo from the crowd when they're chanting or cheering or clapping along. And it has sent the message that AEW is a stale and cold product. And that is hurting them on a significant level. And then you take something like tonight, where WWE has this card that, to me, on paper, is not all that special. And I don't think that if you just take the five wrestling matches presented on Survivor Series tonight, I don't think that this was one of the stronger shows of the year by any means. And both WWE and AEW have had a very strong run of premium live events and pay-per-views this year. I don't think this was one of the strongest. But you take a listen to the crowd, their excitement, their involvement, their participation, the way that they're buying into what WWE is selling them, and you can see the disparity between the two products right now. But then to add on the fact that they brought in the guy who got fired from AEW because of drama involving the EVPs of the company, because ultimately they could not get along. At the end of the day, they just could not get along and make it work. And here's WWE, who wronged Punk significantly almost 10 years ago, who Punk has disparaged publicly and privately for years, and yet they, as a professional company, can work it out. And at the same time that this PLE is airing, AEW is having their live show on television and name-dropping CM Punk for the first time since he left the company. It's not a good look. It's unprofessional. It's tacky. And it makes WWE look like the big leagues and AEW like the minor league.
Yeah, I got, you know, there's some people on Twitter, because of course I got to be looking at it a little bit right now and seeing if we're missing anything real big. But you know, some people as big a names as Ryan Satin are saying biggest hypocrite ever. And I mean, that was 9 years ago, almost 10 years ago. It will be 10 years ago in 2 months. And that's a lot of life lived and a lot of changes gone through for both Trips and Punk. And I just can't take that superficial view of a situation like this when we can't know how much they have gone through. Yes, and I think it was DJ who talked about the show that CM Punk was on with Rene Paquette, and I can't think of what that was called, where they'd talk about the goings-on in wrestling. And there were people who went at him for that. And said, you're a hypocrite for getting paid by WWE. And he'd just say flatly, oh, I'm not getting paid by WWE. I'm getting paid by USA. I just happened to be talking about this company. And that was a bizarre blip on the radar. I never actually watched it. I was not – that didn't capture my fancy. But I don't know. I guess my thoughts are so scattered about this because I never thought we'd be here. So it's like I have a million thoughts that are trying to explode out at once, because that night after the Royal Rumble and then the news we heard in the week that followed, it just seemed like it was over forever. But yeah, DJ said never say never. Brian might have also. And that's what WWE tweeted out, never say never. And they showed the CM Punk return. So, okay. Lest we give these singles matches the short shrift, I guess we can talk
Kelly,
about
before
them.
We move on, actually, about 20 minutes ago, Triple H posted a photo on Twitter with CM Punk backstage in Gorilla. They're pointing at each other. Hunter's got his arm around him the way he does with, you know, the way the new talent or new champion picture that they always take.
Yeah.
And he just tagged it Mighty Cold Day in Hell.
That's great. I mean, there's no way for them to do this other than to lean into it. Because,
yeah, of course,
we on the outside know way more about this than we ever should have. So, and they're using that to their advantage. And I don't know how they don't use some of that in the storyline. Punk is a very, very valuable heel and one of my favorite heels in the business. But right now you've got the ability to do kind of a Stone Cold Steve Austin thing with him, to fight the establishment. But I just don't know that the establishment is well enough established on TV right now. I don't know. Talk me off the ledge.
Well,
from
I think the issue with presenting like a fighting the establishment character with Punk right now is that the establishment is over as a babyface for the first time in like a couple decades.
Oh yeah, I suppose that is probably going to be an issue. And by the way, that's the way I think the establishment should be. I mean, if they're heels, then it was always so illogical to me that they would be mad at the fans that are buying the tickets. Having some dumbass Jack Tunney always made a lot more sense to me, who was trying to be the voice of the people. I don't know, folks. Tell me what I think about the CM Punk return, because I am not yet certain. Singles matches in the middle of this show, mostly harmed by the fact that these betting odds were so strong, Michael Cole brought them up. Because that's like the only way you can say maybe the impossible will happen. What was it, 5,000 to 1, Gunther against The Miz?
Yeah.
Gunther wins with the Lion Tamer. Yeah. Yeah. And Gunther wins with the Lion Tamer on a night where they actually brought up Chris Jericho, which is like a big twofer that, again, surprising to see. But you know that Jericho will be back in that company someday. it's funny to me how many times he's jumped and says the things he says, and nobody understands that he's just like a salesman. And they're surprised, like, oh, well, how did he show up after that? It's like, dude, he's just stumping for his company. He's being a pro wrestler. It's the job. But yes, Gunther over The Miz at 12:21. Santos Escobar over Dragon Lee at 8:20 with the Phantom Driver. Too bad that they had to rush to this match due to injury, but what are you going to do? And Rhea Ripley with the Riptide over Zoe Stark. Zoe brings a lot, but some more time building that character on TV seems like it would have been prudent. Glad they gave her the spot and the chance to sink or swim. But gosh, I know how good she can be because I saw it on NXT, but I don't know if it's a mouthpiece that's missing, if it's just more who is this person that's missing, like maybe a mini documentary type thing. But at any rate, two title matches, I don't know if I've ever been so sure that on a match with championships, I've ever been so certain that none of those would change hands, Brandon.
Yeah, I mean the idea that they were leaning into the betting odds kind of told the story. I mean, I think they did an okay job with the Miz and Gunther match where they put Miz in this situation where he, despite coming into the match technically being the babyface, Miz pulled out all of the heel tactics in order to try to stay alive. And I think that because they did that, because they went with that style of booking, it allowed or it helped people believe that there was a possibility that he could potentially come out on top. So that aspect was a little bit better than I expected. But at the end of the day, there was no doubt. Even when he hit the low blow and the skull-crushing finale and went for the cover and the crowd popped at the kickout, I sensed it was more like the crowd just playing along and going for the ride rather than actually believing that the ride was going to take them to a surprising destination. So it was exactly what I sort of expected it to be. And the same goes for Rhea Ripley and Zoe Stark. I mean, Zoe Stark is certainly a talented wrestler and someone who I think that they can get some significant stuff out of in the future. But unfortunately, she just wasn't there yet tonight. I mean, she just wasn't built to a point of being a credible contender for Rhea's championship, especially given the fact that she was already involved in that Fatal 5-Way at the beginning of the month at Crown Jewel and came up short. I didn't think that immediately going to a singles match with her right after that was the wisest decision because she'd already had the shot and it was shown that she would, you know, that she came up short to Rhea. If anything, it seemed like they were planting the seeds for the Nia Jax match, which would have made a lot more sense because Nia was the only woman who wasn't pinned in that match. If you remember at Crown Jewel, Rhea Stack pinned everyone else in the match. So Zoe had already taken the pinfall to Rhea. So it didn't make a ton of sense for her to come out as the one-on-one challenger here. And I thought that, you know, the match kind of played to that. It didn't stick around very long. It didn't overstay its welcome. Zoe got in a little bit of offense, but the crowd was clearly behind Rhea from the jump. She is too over and too much of a star right now to try to get someone like Zoe in a position of being cheered by the fans in a match like this where they know that the outcome is clear as day. So like the rest of the three singles matches that filled out this card, I sort of felt like they were there, but they didn't do much of anything for anyone.
Yeah, yeah, lots of filler in the middle of that show. I had the same feeling with the skull-crushing finale. Like, I didn't even shift in my seat. My thought was, oh, he's going to kick out of the skull-crushing finale. Like, that's what I thought. And when the crowd went nuts, I just kind of said to my wife, in fairness, a lot of them are drinking tonight, and I'm not. So maybe they were fooled a little bit more than I was. We do have Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee here waiting, just got on the call. So let's go ahead and put him on and see what he's thinking tonight, Sean.
Hey, Brandon, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you real nice.
Yeah, no, it's good to talk to you guys. First, I wanted to ask you if y'all had a good Thanksgiving, because it was fun for me. I got to eat a lot of food, so I'm hoping you guys got to do exactly the same as I did, because it was yummy. It was good stuff. So I hope you guys had the same time, good time with your family and such.
Lots of awesome cooks in my family. Did
so
all
I
the
unfortunately
this time. So yeah, no complaint.
I have minor complaints. I won't spend too long on it, but unfortunately, because of a very inconsiderate coworker, my girlfriend got COVID on Saturday, a week ago today, and we missed Thanksgiving by one day because she was able to go out on Friday, but not on Thanksgiving. So somehow, I don't know how, but somehow, living in the same house with her, not taking any significant precautions, I did not get it. So I remain negative. So that is the great thing. But in solidarity, I did stay in with her on Thanksgiving, and we did our own little thing, which is, you know, unfortunate, but it was fun enough. It wasn't a total downer. So.
Now I feel kind of bad about the fact mine was so good. go ahead.
Exactly. No, well, first I just want to say, Kelly, it's good to talk to you, man. It feels like it's been a while. And Brandon, I always enjoy talking to both of you guys about wrestling, so I'm glad to be on here. I know you guys have probably talked about a lot of the stuff. I just had to get on because I actually was watching it at a good friend of mine. I was getting to watch it at their house. And so I was like, I got done a little bit earlier, and I was thinking, and I was like, man, I got to call these guys and talk about it, because I know you guys have brought a lot. But the one big thing I just wanted to bring up with CM Punk, I know you guys have talked about it. Me personally, I know I've talked to you, Brandon, about it, and I think I've talked to you, Kelly, maybe once about it. I'm not a huge fan of having him back, honestly. I'm not one of these people that I'm just like, I've got to have CM Punk back. I was kind of hoping WWE, honestly, would just go and do what they've been doing. I feel like they've been on a good run. I really just kind of felt like that I just wanted them to keep it that way. I'm not as big of a Punk fan as I used to be. I'll admit before, I liked him a lot. And then I've seen what he's done in AEW. You know, is it all his fault? No, of course not. But I think a lot of it was. And I just think the WWE was in a good spot. But at the same time, I'm willing to let it play out. I'm willing to let him explain why he's there, what they're planning on doing with him, and hopefully they can make it worth my while. So I just want to throw that out there. I'm willing to let it play out, but I'm still very skeptical. I hope there's not a lot of strife that comes from this. I'm assuming everybody's cool with him coming on board. That's why he's there. Obviously, the pop was huge. You knew it was going to be. So if you have anything to say to that, that's fine. But I just wanted to throw that out there real fast at the start.
I'm actually going to say that I kind of am with you on the way that I feel. He's a guy who brings a lot of risk. I'm fascinated as a fan to see what they do with him, even though the level to which I loved the guy at Straight Edge Society days and the height of just other things he did is not there anymore. So I still like him. I still think that there's value that can be found by him, but I'm not a guy who needs him there either. Just as a fan, I'm fascinated to watch this this car either crash or speed over the horizon and you know, into the sky like at the end of Grease. I don't know, folks. I'm all over the place with this metaphor. Brandon, bail me out.
So I am someone who I credit CM Punk with keeping me invested in pro wrestling, not once, but twice. So I look back to the 2011 Summer of Punk, where I think WWE was at a really, really low point creatively. And I was honestly so frustrated with the product at the time that I was barely paying attention to Raw. And when they had that tables match or whatever it was at the end of that show in Vegas, and it's Cena and it's R-Truth, and it just feels like everything is just rolling downhill at an alarming pace. And CM Punk cuts the infamous pipe bomb promo, and suddenly I'm fully hooked and I'm back in, totally on board. And even though, you know, some of that I have to look back on now with rose-tinted glasses, because, you know, a lot of it just went south very quickly. And then, of course, Punk's unceremonious exit from the company was unfortunate and felt, you know, in ways like a slap in the face. And I'm not blind to the fact that as a fan, I've been burned by CM Punk more than once. But that has never been enough to make me feel any less invested in what he's capable of delivering on the microphone and in the ring. And I think he was the catalyst for my reemerging interest in AEW in 2021 as well. When, you know, I thought they had a really good summer, but it just felt like they were missing something. And Punk really, really lit that company on fire for a while and made it feel really special, especially with the, you know, the debuts of Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole shortly thereafter. They just had a really, really impressive run there during 2021. And for a while, I mean, throughout that year, AEW was far and away my favorite promotion to watch. I mean, I was really looking forward to Dynamite on a weekly basis. And that soured over time, and I think, you know, the addition of Collision, even though it was Punk's show, was probably a bad decision creatively. And so I've had ups and downs with Punk over the years. There's no question about that. But I guess at the end of the day, I'm not the one who has to deal with him. So I say that to say I'm not blind to the challenges that having CM Punk in your company can bring and what he can do to a locker room potentially. But as a fan, I enjoy watching him in the ring and I enjoy watching him cut promos on the microphone. And if I get to do that for a little bit longer in a company where I genuinely thought I would never see him do it again, then I'm going to take it for what it is and try to enjoy it. And if it all blows up in my face, I won't be surprised. But I'm gonna take it for now.
Yeah, I was at Full Gear 2021 with Wade Keller and here in the Twin Cities and in the media room and everything there. And CM Punk was one of the guys that got interviewed after that night and after his matches. And you could just tell that every question was just non-moronic enough for him not to chew out the person asking it. Like he was, that edge is there. And I think it's there all the time. So it will be, as we've said over and over, it will be interesting to see what this brings. Sean, let me unmute you again. And if you've got another one, go ahead.
Yeah. So Brandon, I think I'm with you. Going back to him real fast, is the injury bug that I'm worried about, because he's had a lot of injuries since he's come back. And I just, that's another worry with me. And apparently from what Hunter said, he's excited to have him back. And so, you know, they've worked things out, and if he's willing to take him on, I'm excited to go for the ride, whatever ride we're going to go on. But I wanted to talk about Randy really fast, and it was fun to have him back. It was really fun to have him back. I mean, it was just exciting to see how much fun he was having being back, just enjoying being back in front of the crowd. I mean, he loves WWE, and you can see that. And he really, I know he worked, he looked in great shape. He looked like he's worked his butt off to get back. Again, with his back, I hope he's, you know, fine. He can do what he's been doing for years. But it was really, really good. I mean, he, the spot, of course, with JD, you know, with RKO was really cool. JD, I mean, props to him for taking that. That's, I wouldn't want to take that, but I'm glad he did because it looked cool. So I wanted to hear, you know, I know you guys probably already talked about the match itself, which was a really, really fun match. Faces won, which I was expecting. Kind of more heat with the Judgment Day, kind of see where they go with Drew and all that. But so if you want to talk about Drew too, because Drew didn't have a lot in the match, which I think kind of surprised me a little bit. I'm curious where they're going with him. They really haven't defined him still yet, like totally heel. Like where is he, which is intriguing. But I wanted to hear what you guys thought about the match too, but Randy and kind of where do you think he's going? Because I'm really excited to see what they've got in store for him coming back because it feels fresh right now. So I wanted to hear what you thought about him coming back and where he's going.
After the stare down, I think that Orton McIntyre is going to happen, if not before WrestleMania, at WrestleMania. I just think that there was a meaningful stare down there that, and then they didn't have those guys interact like all that much. They just had Orton destroy the smaller dudes, the fall guys on the Judgment Day, and do that. We did indeed talk about him some, but not a lot because naturally Punk dominated the conversation. But yeah, Orton's not a guy that has ever been appointment television for me. He's not like somebody I ever thought of on my list of favorites. And I haven't really liked him since probably the first time he was Intercontinental Champion, back in 03, 02, whatever it was. That's the last time he was like a mega favorite of mine. Even though he's never been somebody that I'm like, get him off my TV either. But God, his joy came through tonight really huge. It really looked like he was having the time of his life out there. And let's be honest, he was probably relieved because he had to be worried that he'd get the boos because he was not CM Punk. I wonder if they had to convince him, hey, it's going to be okay. We're going to have Punk come out there anyway. So no problem if it's not as smooth as it could be. And that Chicago crowd just ate it up. And I don't know if there was anything Brandon you wanted to say otherwise about Orton's return and how he looks and how worried you are about that injury, but I'll throw to you.
Yeah, he looked really good. I mean, clearly he's been working really hard to get back into shape and get back to a point where he could do this conceivably for a while longer. I mean, he said in interviews in recent years that he's really enjoying himself, and that's good because for a long time I think that wasn't the case with Orton. And to me, Orton is one of those guys who makes it very visible whether he's enjoying what he's doing or not. I mean, when you get Randy Orton phoning it in, man, is it a bad time for everybody? I mean, I have sat through some slogs of Randy Orton feuds and matches, and that contributed a lot to him not being, you know, a major favorite of mine either. But I felt like in the last few years, he's really put his best foot forward and has been really motivated to do some cool stuff and some entertaining stuff. I thought the pairing with Matt Riddle was really strong and really good for his career, even if that sort of, you know, went down in flames in the end for a number of reasons, none of which were really Randy's fault. It's surprising at the end of the day that he was even able to make a return. I mean, we had heard for a while there that it wasn't a given that he would come back at all. I mean, it was a serious enough injury that he very easily could have stayed retired if he had wanted to. He's made his money. He has paid his dues. He's done everything that there is to do. But clearly, if he's back, it's because he feels like he's still got something left to give, and if we're getting a motivated Orton, then it should be a fun run. And I do suspect that we do see Orton and McIntyre at some point, and that's a feud that I think would be really important for McIntyre to come out on top of. I just feel like McIntyre's been dealt a pretty poor hand over the last several years, and getting a strong, definitive win over an act as over and as consistent as Randy Orton is really saying something, and it is sort of reaffirming the commitment to Drew overall. And Orton is Teflon. I mean, he can take a loss like that very, very easily.
You took that. If you hadn't said Teflon, that word was just waiting to come out of my mouth for the same reason. I mean, and not only that, but he's kind of probably entering the give back portion of his career. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of there. So, the length of his feuds over time is another thing that grated on me as well. I don't want to sound like I'm exaggerating, but 3 out of 4 matches in wrestling history are Batista versus Randy Orton. So just just a crazy fact. 3 out of 4 matches, those two guys. Sean, if you got more, go ahead.
Yeah, so I wanted to just bring up the Rhea, Zoe, as you guys were just talking about it. I'm with you guys on Zoe. I think Zoe's making strides. I think her, you know, in the ring, she's really good, but yeah, her character just needs to be fleshed out, and that's what was hard about, like you said, that match was Rhea. Was just everybody's going to cheer Rhea, and it was hard to really get Zoe to, you know, we knew she wasn't going to win, so it was just hard to really invest in it. But it was good. The match was good for what it was. But I want to talk about the women's division as a whole, because I don't know if you guys have talked about it a whole lot, because you were talking about CM Punk, obviously, most of the time. But I wanted to go up to the women's division, more talk about the War Games match itself. It was good. Like, they worked really hard. It was a fine match. It wasn't anything spectacular. There were a few really good spots. But the spots I don't like, I'll just kind of vent real quick. I give Io credit for standing on top of a cage and holding and putting a garbage can on her head and not knowing, you know. But those spots are just so contrived to me. I just hate when you just have to, you know, that all the women are just going to get over there and just get in a big huddle and just stand there and wait to be jumped on. I hate those spots. I hate them. And Charlotte doing the moonsault, again, we know how athletic she is. It was cool her getting on top of the cage, but it just, you have to wait for her to get up on the cage and stand up there, and everybody's just going to get over there, and they're all going to stand in a big line where she's going to dive on top of them. I don't like those spots. I know they're going to happen because they're cage matches, but it feels so contrived. I hate them. I wish they would stop doing them. So I wanted to get that out there really fast. But the match itself was good. Was very surprised that the faces went over. I thought the heels would win only from the perspective of they're starting to grow back Damage Control and supposedly getting them closer together as a faction, not the Bayley part, because Bayley, you know, is kind of the story of we don't know where she's in with them. We don't know if they really have her together with them. We don't know if they're really liking her right now. They just, is it pretend, you know, is it whatever. I just filled them back up. They would need a big win like this and to pin somebody like a Shotzi, who she had a couple of cool spots, but I just don't like Shotzi. I've made that very well known. I was worried at the beginning of the match where she almost fell on her head. I thought she hurt her head. And then she did a couple cool spots at the end. But I was just like, I don't want her in this match. I'd rather her just get pinned. But no, they had Becky get the pin. The manhandle slam was a cool spot, and they got the pin there. But where do you think – were you as surprised as I was the faces went over? And where do you think this leaves Damage Control? Are they still trying to get stronger? Like, where do you think – what do you think is going to be happening with that whole faction and that match? What do you think of that match as a whole?
Talked about it some, but we sort of, I don't know, we kind of surfed over it. I predicted all the matches tonight correctly, which is not to say that was difficult to do with the other four. This is the only one where I had any doubt at all, just any at all. And the reason I predicted this one correctly is because they're doing something with Damage Control. Otherwise, I would have said, okay, they needed a fall guy. It's Shotzi's in a happy-to-be-there position. Shotzi can fall in this match and come out been there. But I thought that Damage Control would lose this. I mean, maybe part of that is just because I'm conditioned to see them lose as a unit, but also because they're doing something with them. And the fact that Bailey's the one who ate this pin, we talked about how that's probably leading to the darker, the meaner members, not the snotty ones like Bailey, maybe turning on her and blaming her for this loss and saying that this faction has lost a lot under her leadership. Now it's time for Asuka, or whatever that looks like, or for Io, who's got potentially more years ahead of her than Asuka. So I liked the match, but I can't say that I felt that it had some major stamp on it. There have been NXT War Games matches that were not the same in terms of talent or smoothness, but were much, much better in terms of pure storytelling and making me remember what that match was about. And I only go back to matches that feel like they were about something most of the time, that they really had some kind of stamp on them, especially high concept matches like this. A one-on-one can be just a great one-on-one, I suppose. But a match that tells a really high concept match, I want to see these ones that really tell a story. And you've always got a chance to do that with War Games. And it seemed like they took a year off from doing that, Brandon.
It's the same reason that I mentioned at the top of the show that I didn't find last year's Women's War Games match to be particularly memorable, even being in the building. And it's not that I didn't like the match at the time, and I did. And if I watched it back, I'm sure I'd still like it. But it wasn't particularly memorable because it didn't have a real strong story to it. And this was the case here as well. The story was a little bit more nuanced in that they were telling the demise of Bailey, in that Bailey, and it's not really a story that you were meant to pick up on until the end when she eventually took the fall and it kind of became clear. But Bailey was clearly the MVP of that match for damage control throughout. I mean, she was the first in the ring for her team. She fought valiantly. She ends up, you know, as I had mentioned earlier, Bailey was the one who was most hesitant about allowing Kairi Sane to join damage control. And then in the end, she is the one to save Kairi from eating a spear from Charlotte Flair and instead takes it herself. But that leads to the crux of the story of this match, which is that Bailey is the one that loses, and Bailey is usually the one that loses, and damage control usually loses. So the story is set up for the remaining members of damage control to kick Bailey out under the guise that the faction, the stable, has failed with her as their leader, and Bailey can explore a new babyface character, which I think it's time for her to do. I think she's earned that. I think that the crowd will be happy to cheer her again if they're given the opportunity and she's presented in a way that makes it feasible for them, which this certainly does because, again, Bailey fought really valiantly in the match. She was the star of the show, so to speak, and then she's going to get turned on for her troubles. So that was the story for me. I think that damage control can be salvaged and repurposed in a much more positive light under control of Asuka or Io Sky, or just, you know, the four of them sort of not having a de facto leader the way Judgment Day operates. As I mentioned to Kelly earlier in the show, though, I do hope they change the name. I think Damage Control is sort of a damaged goods at this point, and I think that they'd be better served changing the name once they kick Bailey out.
Yeah, I think that we, for whatever reason, kind of as a wrestling fandom collective, believe that factions cannot be saved because it's too much work. But Judgment Day was nearly dead on arrival, it felt like. And then they became appointment TV. So it can be done. And as somebody who watches New Japan, I've seen Bullet Club be great, and I've seen it really, really suck. So, it can happen where it peaks and valleys for an entire faction. You know, Greg was going to pass along any emails he got. He is more or less on his honeymoon, so perhaps more pressing matters than sending emails to some dudes about CM Punk, but he has not done so. Sean, if you got one more, go ahead.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing that up, Greg. Man, I hope he's doing well. I hope he's enjoying it. congratulations to him, of course. And I know he was already doing that, but it's cool that that's official now, and he's a married man now, so that's cool. But am I crazy? Are you guys with me on those spots? I wanted to ask you that real quick. Am I just going overboard with those spots, or do they feel the same to you when they happen, or are you just kind of like, it is what it is, and it's part of the match, it's what they're going to do?
That got kind of forgotten by me, but I am with you, actually. I think that you could put a moratorium on some of those spots, because if you want to do that garbage can spot, cool, but I've seen it multiple times now, including multiple times by you. And if you want to do, what do they call it, the tower, where everybody teams up for a big superplex splash body slam in the corner, and for a while, that was your guaranteed spot on NXT War Games. You knew it would happen in both the men and the women's matches every time out. Yeah, they ask a lot of us when – it just seems like you don't even have to get rid of the spots entirely if you just tinker with them to make it a little more realistic that everybody would be in that spot. The problem is you can't have just them all laying there, because way too many things could go wrong with the way that Io or Charlotte's legs land. So you can't have them all laying down. And you can't have them, like, all run out of the way. I guess you could. It would be hilarious. But it would it would be no good for that person jumping from the top of the damn cage. So we have seen enough innovative spots in the last couple of years to know that they're still out there. There's still new ground to be trod, and you can still find something new to do in a ladder match, in a Hell in a Cell match, in an Elimination Chamber environment. These things can happen. Brandon, any moves you need to see go away?
Yeah, the garbage can spot I'm a little less critical of, only because it felt like the match needed a big signature moment, and that was clearly it. I mean, that seemed like it was the biggest pop, unless maybe – I mean, Becky and Charlotte's hug was pretty over. That could have topped it, but
yeah.
The garbage can spot was over big. And so I give that one a pass. The one I'm less inclined to give a pass to is Charlotte's moonsault. Because I've spoken about this ad nauseum, but it never looks good. I don't know that I can point to one time other than maybe that very first time she did it at like WrestleMania 20 or 32 in Dallas, where it has looked good. I mean, she misses it every single time. This time tonight, she connected with her knees and part of her upper thigh and kind of landed awkwardly on the head of, I don't remember if it was Kairi Sane or Io Sky or whoever. But not only does she not land it, but you have to do that wonky, bore-out setup where everyone else involved in the match has to stand below her like idiots, hanging on to each other, pretending that they can't stand up to get into position for her to jump. And it was even more egregious and obvious tonight because they weren't just waiting for her to fly off the top rope to the outside. They were waiting for her to climb the entire cage and get to the top before she flew off. So I don't know how you fix that spot. Not just the moonsault, but the coming off the top of a structure where you're taking out a crowd of people. I don't know if it needs to be better timed so that you get the wrestlers in place closer to the last second. And I realize that there's danger involved in that. And the reason that they do it the way that they do it is so that people land safely. But I think I would just prefer that they do away with it altogether because it looks dumb. It looks overly choreographed.
Yeah, I'm always just fascinated, too, by moves that wrestlers feel like are part of their signature, but they've never actually done it in a way that looks good. Like, Tamina, I get why Tamina does the superfly splash, but she just steps off the top rope and falls. She doesn't have the confidence to jump from there. So it just looks like a really, really cheap imitation. And I always just thought, why is there nobody saying, hey, Tamina, it's super cool that you want to do this to honor Jimmy. but hey, maybe don't. Could you just not? I don't know. It's just I don't know how that is when somebody has a signature and you have to tell them it's just not working out. But there you have it. Yeah, Brad, I don't know if we derailed you because you asked for the thoughts on those overdone moves. But if you got one more thing to play us off, you can. Otherwise, we'll throw in some final thoughts here and head for the exits.
Well, Kelly, I don't know what to think of you calling me Brad, but I'll forgive you just because I'm
Brad.
I love
oh my gosh, he's another caller that I really like. I'm so
I know. He's
you
good.
Know what? Brian called me Greg. Brian was on earlier. He called me Greg intentionally about 15 times, and it was A1 trolling. Loved it. Apparently, I'm paying it forward. Go ahead, Sean.
No, Brad's great, and Brian, of course. I mean, he's made 33-year PW subscriber now. I'm like, dang, that's crazy. I mean, I've barely been alive that long. No offense to you, Brian. The two quick things. The first was going back to the if Carlito is quote-unquote going to be hurt, just don't have the match. Like, don't sacrifice Dragon Lee to him. Like, I know Santos has got this heel character now finally, and I think he's in a good lane, but don't have him beat Dragon Lee. Come on, guys. Not do that. Good match. Very good match, but don't do that. No need to do that. And then way off topic, Brandon, are either of you guys college football fans at all?
No, I am pro basketball and baseball mostly. I tolerate pro football. I say tolerate. I watch every game my team plays. But I don't love it to the same degree that I love. I'm the sports card guy in a collectively owned sports card shop. That's what I do. In fact, I had to tape the news because I was interviewed for Small Business Saturday today. Like, I'm on TV today talking about sports cards and things like that. So, yeah, I'm very, very into sports. So when I say that I'm kind of into football, that is sort of on a different curve. I will say that I don't watch a lot of college football because when you're obsessed with a sport that plays 162 games, a sport that plays 82, and New Japan Pro Wrestling and WWE, where's the time for college football?
Yeah, on my end, I like college football. I'm a diehard NFL fan. I try to catch major games in college, but oftentimes it doesn't work out because during the fall I dedicate my entire Sunday to NFL football, so I sort of need my Saturday.
Well, I was just going to say, so you guys probably saw something because Alabama played Auburn today. And I mean, now,
I did see
am
that.
I biased? Yes, am I biased? I don't like Alabama. I mean, I'll be honest about it. But I'm very, you know, I'm a college football junkie. Like, I will say if Alabama's good, if they deserve to be really – or if they're really good, I'll say they're really good. Kelly, Alabama converted. Auburn had them in a fourth and goal at the 31-yard line, which means you have to get a play of 31 yards to score a touchdown.
Oh, yeah.
They somehow gave that up. Like – I was just sitting there, like, my
Alabama
mind was just blown. I'm like,
Alabama
had a fourth and goal at the 31 down. Yes, Alabama was down four with 30 seconds left, fourth and goal at the 31, no timeouts, and fourth and goal at the 31. It was just like, I've never seen anything like it. I was just, my mind was blown. And I was like, I almost want to not watch college football anymore. Like, that's how frustrated I was watching the end of this game. So I just had to throw that out there because I didn't know if you guys, you know, but that's what makes college football great is you never know what's going to happen in some of these, like, really good games, these rivalry games. I mean, they're always fun to watch anyway, but, man, that was something else. And I'm glad
Alabama
is on tonight.
They are the Roman Reigns of college football. Like, you watch, and you know you shouldn't get your hopes up, but you do.
Right.
Yeah, so that's kind of the deal.
But no, that's all I had, guys. I appreciate you guys. You guys are, I enjoy talking wrestling with you, and I just appreciate you taking my call as always. Thank you very much.
All right, we thank you as always, Sean. Yeah, it's a weird show because I enjoyed so many things about what I saw, but it doesn't feel like one I will go back to. Like, maybe I watch that CM Punk moment if the CM Punk return turns out to be something good. And maybe I watch these War Games matches if I decide that I'm going to watch all the War Games matches. So for me, show was better than the sum of its parts. Lots of skippable content, but at least that skippable content was decent, Brandon. So I hate to be that guy who puts thumbs in the middle, so I will lean them slightly up, Brandon.
I give it a mild thumbs up, and I do that because the Randy Orton return was impactful. The CM Punk return, whether you're excited about the prospects of it or not, is certainly a monumental moment. It's huge for the company. It's huge for news going forward. It's intriguing, whether you're a fan of the move or not. It's a big deal. And so on newsworthiness alone, I mean, it gets a thumbs up. I think that the War Games matches, though I had my qualms with both of them for different reasons and didn't think that they were all that memorable in the long term, they were enjoyable enough to watch in the moment that this is still a thumbs up show for me, on the lower end of, I think, what WWE has presented for PLEs this year. But that's not even that big of an indictment, because I think, as I said earlier, it's been a really strong year for both WWE and AEW when it comes to pay-per-views and PLEs.
I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on the former Twitter at Spooky Milk. I do PWT Talks NXT, as well as host NXT 8 years back on the VIP side of our site. Brandon, who are you?
Yeah, I am. I'm Brandon LeClaire. I have been with the Torch for a little over 4 years now. Started covering SmackDown, moved on to the pay-per-view PLE beat. So you can find my work on the Torch each and every month. I cover all WWE PLEs and all AEW pay-per-views. I also am a frequent co-host with Wade Keller on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. And my latest gig is joining usually Greg Parks after every PLE and pay-per-view on Wrestling Night in America.
Yes, indeed. And I hang out with those two guys. You know what? You can find me all the hell over the site. I promise. that is our show. Thank you. If it is this time Saturday, it must be Wrestling Night in America. And a newlywed Greg Parks will be back with you at the regular time next week. Cheers, everyone. Damn fine show, if I say so myself.
Yeah, a lot of fun. After they kind of went off the air, I was scrambling to finish up my report, and I was just like, God, I don't even know what I'm going to say to this. Like, I don't, it's like I didn't have enough time to formulate any thoughts about what just happened.
You know, it's weird. I had that same feeling. It's like, I have occasional anxiety issues, less than when I was a kid, but they come up, and I was feeling massive anxiety that does not happen to me before podcasts ever. And it happened here, and then adrenaline took over, and I guess I forgot all about it. But now that I'm done, I feel the tightness in my like my shoulders again. Like, I was all worried that I wasn't going to be able to figure anything out. And of course, the show goes exactly the length it's supposed to.
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked. I mean, like I said at the top of the show when we first got on, I mean, it's very rare. I mean, I've been watching wrestling long enough now to kind of know, you know, even when they're going to surprise me, I'm never